Welcome to Entrepreneur Showdown Presents with your hosts, Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks.
It's Thursday morning, and that means it's time for Entrepreneur Showdown Presents. And as we know, this month of October 2013, it's Entertainment Entrepreneur Month. And today, as Jason Derulo would say, I'm riding solo, just me and the guest, and today's guest is a good one, Gwen Reyes. Gwen is a television and movie critic from right here in Dallas, Texas, and I've always been fascinated with the whole movie critic business, and if you can actually make a living doing nothing but reviewing movies and television, sounds pretty plush, right? Well, we're going to ask Gwen about the business viability of that and a whole lot more about her business. For the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, head on over to EntrepreneurShowdown.com. And with that, let's get on to Gwen Reyes. Today, I'm riding solo for Entrepreneur Showdown Presents, and I apologize in advance because this thing could go anywhere. But being that it's Entertainment Entrepreneur Month, I knew I had to find someone in the entertainment industry that could hold her own on the microphone, and that's exactly what I did. Gwen Reyes is a blogger, a podcaster, and internet marketer, but we've brought her on today to talk about something she does that I've always had an interest in. Gwen is a television and a movie critic, and I'm about to find out if she really does get into every movie for free. So let's not waste any more time. Gwen, what's going on?
Hi, Dan. Nice to see you.
Hey, good to see you. And I got to thank you right now just ahead of time because we had a guest scheduled that canceled so rudely on us at the last minute.
What a jerk.
And we almost always record with like a month lead time, so this never happens. But this just happened to be some guy that was putting us off over and over in the slot we had him scheduled for, because the way recording schedules worked out was to go live tomorrow. And of course, he's the one that drops off on us. But luckily enough, Joe and myself met Gwen at PodCamp Dallas this weekend, and we talked for a good while about television and movie and all these things that Gwen was involved in. So immediately our thoughts jumped to bringing her on, and luckily enough, Gwen was so kind to fill in and hopefully, I'm guessing, be an even better guest than what we had scheduled. So thank you for that.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. Now, my original question, I'm going to go back to, do you really get into every movie for free?
I would every movie, but I would, like, 98% of the movies I do see for free.
That's awesome, especially with the rising cost of movies. Do you have like relationships with all the different movie companies, or how does that work that you happen to get these free screenings?
So how it works is there are local publicists in Dallas that work with different studios and stuff, and I've been fortunate enough the last few years to get on their list and get invited to their screenings. And so it's like, you know, if there are new Universal films coming out, their person will send out a note saying, hey, the screening's on Wednesday, come out, come see it, and you can bring a guest with you. So a lot of my friends get to come see movies with me for free too.
Okay, so you have a lot of friends that stay in touch.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really funny is you'd be surprised, because I actually have a hard time filling or trying to get people to go to movies with me now, because they get kind of, they're like, I don't really want to see that. And I'm like, that's a luxury I don't have.
Yeah. So are these screenings typically before the movies come out?
Oh, I'm sorry?
Are these screenings typically before the movie comes out that you're going to see these?
They're typically about 2 weeks before the film comes out, I'll get to see it. Sometimes I get to see them a few months before, like if I'm interviewing a director or something, they'll screen it for us early and then bring the directors will come in town and you can interview them. Or like today, there's a screening of Carrie this evening, and that movie comes out in 2 days from now. So sometimes they're just the last minute screeners.
Now, is this a remake of the original Carrie, or is this
something? It's a remake of the original Carrie, starring Julianne Moore as the mom and Chloe Grace Moretz, who was in Let Me In, which was the Never Let Me Go adaptation.
Nice.
We do.
Now, what do they all scream? Everyone's going to laugh at you or something. What is it? When they're all pointing at her and screaming when the blood drops on her in the... You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
the famous scene.
I can't remember I've actually, honestly, never seen Carrie.
Oh, no. Well, okay, so you know the still, though, where she's covered in
blood.
No,
I know, I do. Okay. I'm just like, I don't know the line. I should know the line.
Well, okay, so hopefully you'll know it. If they cut that any of that famous scene out, they're doing the original some injustice. But you wouldn't know, so.
Yeah, sure. I'd be like, it looks great.
People yeah.
Wrong.
Okay, so how does one become a television and movie critic? Is it just something that you need to have is a blog, or does it really take some, I guess, some foundation or some connections to actually get going?
It's just like, I think just like in any industry, you definitely need to kind of have connections or know who to talk to. My story is kind of interesting because I have always been interested in film, and it was always like a big passion. It's something my dad and I shared together. My family, we'd always have Friday night dinners and go watch movies together growing up. And then when I went to college, I ended up majoring in philosophy and film studies, just because I thought film studies sounded interesting. And, you know, why not waste my money going and getting a and it ended up being really good because I got into working as my day job is working in the literary world. And one of my clients ended up being a local film and television critic. And I went and started working with her, and she would send me to movies. And then I got to know people, and I also worked for a film festival. And so through that, just kind of knowing different people, I kind of switched from working in the film festival side to then working in the film critic side, which is much more my speed, I think.
So no aspirations or experience on the on-screen roles?
Nothing on screen. I have worked on a couple of short films, just as like location manager and producer and stuff. And that was fine. I definitely just think that I just more enjoy seeing the complete product, not necessarily making the product myself.
And what have you ever been on screen as a critic?
Yeah, I've actually on in Dallas, I'm on Good Morning Texas, which is on Channel 8, the WFAA station. I'm on twice a month as the book literary contributor. So I do book recommendations on air.
Okay, very cool. So I've got to ask you this because a lot of times I'll tell my wife or something like, oh, the critics say this movie's really good. We got to go see it. And of course, her response is, who are they? Why should we listen to them? So let me ask the critic, why should anyone give a crap about what the critics think?
You know, it's interesting. I think that's a really good question to ask because a lot of the times, and I think especially with the internet making people's opinions just in your face all the time, it kind of at the end of the day really helps with spread the word of mouth. And if somebody else is coming in and it's a voice that you trust, or if you've read their work more than once and you know that they have similar taste to you, it's kind of just like helps you not waste your money. And that's always how I look at my reviews. I tend to just be like, I don't want you, if you and your wife are going on a date and dropping $50 to go watch Grab, to be a bad experience for you. If that's not the movie that's meant for you, then there might be something else better out there. And I think that's what critics, if they're really good critics, bring up. And then there's also people who are film analysis who really enjoy kind of looking at the deeper levels of a film. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of people, if they just want to read a critic, they want to know, is this movie worth my time? Is it good? How long is it? Who's in it? All right, let me see if this is something I want to go to.
So if you were coaching someone who had no idea what a movie critic was, you've got a complete, I guess, a clean slate, and you're telling them this is how to properly utilize movie critics to decide what movie you need to see, would you guide them to find one movie critic that kind of has the same train of thought as them, or would you always advise them maybe to aggregate a couple of them and make their decisions that way, like a Rotten Tomatoes or something like that?
I would think aggregating would probably be best. Like for me, I started by looking at, before I even knew what like movie criticism was, other than like Siskel and Ebert, I started by looking at IMDb pages. And the cool thing about like IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes, because I still feel like Rotten Tomatoes might still be a little niche if you're brand new to just kind of like getting your voice out. But going to IMDb, because it's just a website, and on the right hand side, they list anytime there is an IMDb approved reviewer, they put the review up there and you can kind of read it. And then that'll link you into seeing more stories and more things. And it's kind of like, you know, you're already one-stop shopping. You're already where you want to be. You're seeing all the information. And then from there, it'll say, you know, what did so-and-so over at Hollywood Reporter say? And the names of sites or the names of publications will start making sense to you. But it's kind of just like, how do you find the film and then from there find the review?
Well, since we were talking about Rotten Tomatoes, when you and I were talking about this past mm-hmm. Saturday at PodCamp, you said you were not a contributor to Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm not.
What is that? Is there like a certain process or a certain buy-in you have to that site? What do they have there's going like
a,
on there?
It's there's a certain it's like traffic related as well as how much you're producing each month, you know, like some people, and then you also have to apply. And it's just like an application process, just like any sort of other criticism groups. You just kind of have to apply. Same with IndieWire, which is another one that they individually approve which publications they're going to include in their IndieWire roundup. And it's just an application process. So it's really easy if it's something that you're into and you have over 100 reviews up and ready to go that are relative, you can apply for Rotten Tomatoes and they'll start using yours to aggregate their supply.
Gotcha. Now let's talk about some of your reviews and what, when you post a review or give a written mm-hmm. or verbal review, how do you deal with negative criticism? Because anytime someone gives their review, it's just subjective. So, you know, anyone can agree or disagree with you. Have you ever had like some kind of backlash from people who disagreed with you and maybe they acted somewhat irrationally with this, you know, reacting to your review?
You know, it's funny is that when I first started, I was very much like trying to find my voice and trying to figure out how I wanted to get my voice across. I was trained like you don't want to write in first person or you do want to write in first person, and it just like the flow is very different. But the most backlash I ever got is I used to write for a website called Film School Rejects, and I wrote their column. So that was like I would sit and every week watch a whole bunch of movies that had sexy sex scenes in them or talk about sex and politics and relationships in current films that were coming out that week. And those were the ones I'd always get the most sort of vitriol kind of conversations, just because I think that everybody kind of has their opinion of something. And a lot of the times they were movies that people had never seen. And so I always found it hilarious that people would get very upset about a movie that they hadn't even watched, about my opinion that I gave a movie that they were like, oh, well, one day I'll watch that movie, or it doesn't even come out for 2 more weeks. And I'm like, well, let's talk about this in 2 weeks, not talk about this right now.
That's pretty funny. I guess it's one of those hot button topics that you happen to, I don't know if you were assigned that or if that's kind of an area of expertise, quote unquote, for you. Is that what you would call it?
Yeah, it was a focus of mine. It was definitely like a specialization that I had. 'Cause before I reviews, like most female writers, I was writing about relationships, and I kind of just infused the two of them with the real sex column, and it was interesting because I would get a lot of just like very sort of harsh criticisms, especially from men, but it was always just people that were like, that movie sounds off. It's like, I don't like what you're writing, and they wouldn't give you like a reason why. And that's, you know, criticism 101 is you have an opinion. All of us have an opinion. It's the ability to kind of tell somebody why your opinion's the way it is.
Right. That's, well, it's interesting. A lot of our listeners are either bloggers or podcasters, and they might mm-hmm. face somewhat of a similar dilemma as you do when you're writing reviews. And you mentioned you, sure. when you were starting out, do I write in a tone that's, you know, maybe built for my audience, or if I write in the tone that's me and then hope the audience likes what I'm doing? How did you kind of find that balance?
Yeah, it's really hard because I can sit here and say, write for the, you know, write for the audience or write for the tone that you want to write. But it's hard because, you know, your tone could not be something people want to read. And if you are unhappy writing for your audience, then your audience isn't going to want to read it either. And it's kind of finding what your niche is and finding where your voice really fits. Like for me, Real Vixen has always been a site that has been, we are only female writers that write for the site. And we predominantly talk about female issues, and it's not necessarily like feminism or anything like that. Like we'll talk about how handsome Chris Hemsworth looks without his shirt and how much we demand more naked Chris Hemsworth in the next Thor movie. And that's like, to me, a women's issue, and it brings different types of conversations into the forefront. And it's just as easily as I can sit and talk about the sexualization of things that are fairly sexual, as in like if we're going to sit and talk about toddlers and tiaras and the ongoing argument that you're sexualizing an 8-year-old. And those are also, I feel like, feminist female issues just as much as one or the other.
I think it's interesting that your movie site, Real Vixen, it does take kind of that feminine view of everything. Was mm-hmm. that your from the start, your idea, we're going to make this site and we're automatically going to cut out pretty much half of our audience, but we're going to try to niche down and do something a little different? Was that the whole idea?
Yeah, it was always my intention when I launched Real Vixen in 2011. It was always the intention of mine that I wanted to have a female driven website. Fresh Fiction, which is this the sister site to Real Vixen, which is like, it's kind of like IMDb for books. It's also another site that I own, is predominantly women, and it's books about by and for women. And I did the same thing with film, and that's it wanted to touch on. And it was also what I was reading. I was reading Jezebel and The Hairpin and sites that were feminist driven. And I never saw kind of fun criticisms of films. And I wanted to infuse that sort of fun, foxy sort of criticism, but also bring like a slanted edge to it and also talk a little bit about the issues that as a woman I want to see in my film and television.
That's very cool. We talk about that kind of thing a lot with our guests, the niche selection and picking mm-hmm. the direction you want to go and really trying to not appeal to everyone. But maybe if you yep. have a more targeted audience, then you might not appeal to as many people, but you might have a more engaged audience and people that you know, come back more just because you're targeting them specifically. So I think that's exactly. that's real cool that you're doing that as well. Now, ever since you when you first got your start, what was your first big break? Was it a big interview you had or a big role you got or something that really made you jumped you to that next level?
Well, I just remember when I got, it's funny because I was talking about getting my first, going to my first screening with the publicist who set that up for me. I was just having the conversation with her about how, like, you know, I've been in the business since 2009 and it's so exciting. But I think the biggest moment for me was when I got to interview Drew Barrymore was in town in Dallas for a press screening and junket for Whip It. And it was the first time I had ever, I was like brave enough to go and like talk to the celebrity, and it was on a red carpet. And since then I don't do a lot of red carpets because I think that they're really, really draining on the soul. But it's, you kind of have to, like lay that foundation and do that. And then I've had other ones where when I got Good Morning Texas, that was a huge break for me because that was finally getting to do on air stuff that I wanted to do. It may not be film yet, but it's books and it's talking about something I love and it's on television. And that's a big, big deal for me.
That's interesting about your big break being on the TV show and Good Morning Texas. It's on the ABC affiliate here in Dallas for everyone else, but people in Dallas that don't know that. But I think this is something that maybe is somewhat underutilized by people in the online business space. Like if you're an expert at something, there are places that you can go, whether they be local or regional or television shows or even radio shows that you can kind of advertise yourself to and get picked up to do things like this. How did you go about getting a spot on Good Morning Texas?
Well, you know, and it's so true because that's one of the things, like before I was on TV and when I was just kind of like just kind of working and figuring out what I wanted to do, that was one of the things that I kept running into when I'd go to different meetups and marketing groups and PR groups, was that you have a talent, you have this thing. If you're comfortable talking for 5 minutes about what you do, which I think anybody who is an entrepreneur or loves what they do can talk about what they do for 5 minutes, they were like, get on TV. And with Good Morning Texas, I fell into that. Thank God for 50 Shades of Grey when that book came out, because that book not only helped me on my film and television side because I got to be on the 50 Shades very long time. It also opened the doors to local TV stations wanting to have more book club selections on their channels. And with Good Morning Texas, they were looking for a local book club leader, and they reached out to Barnes & Noble, and I have a very good relationship with Barnes & Noble, and they couldn't do it, but they recommended me, and I got it just kind of by knowing the right people to talk to.
And that's interesting that you got it through Barnes & Noble. You weren't, I guess, actively marketing yourself to the TV stations like, hey, this is something I could be an expert in if you ever need one. Yeah, have you ever had to do something like that or been successful doing something like that?
I have. Since that experience, I think that kind of just like gave me the little bit of and now I pitch myself to a lot more things. Like I pitched myself to I now do interviews for the Angelica Film Center. And that's one that I had to pitch to them and kind of give them an example. I'm pitching more stuff to Good Morning Texas to kind of do their other shows, because they also have a couple of other afternoon shows that are still lifestyle and women's interests. And it's kind of like once you get that first one, it's really easy to ask people for more after that. But it's that first one that's always a little hard.
Well, staying a little bit on the topic of interviews, you mentioned that Drew Barrymore was one of your biggest one. What would you say is your biggest or best interview that you've ever gotten?
Oh, let's see. Well, I got to interview Michael Fassbender, which was really exciting. He was the star of Shame when that came out. It was a little film that came out a few years ago, and he's actually going to be in 12 Years a Slave, which is getting a lot of Oscar buzz right now, as well as he played Magneto in the latest X-Men films. Gyllenhaal when he was at South by Southwest. And let's see, I've done a lot. It's really hard. Oh, I recently interviewed Tom Hiddleston, who plays Loki in the Avengers films. I'm just like listing off very handsome men now.
Right. And who should be the lead star of 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, for sure.
Correct?
Okay. Yes, absolutely. Now that I got to chat with Charlie before he got cast as Christian Grey, and now he's been kicked out of that. So it's been really fortunate. I've been very fortunate to get to talk to a lot of famous people. I remember when I first got into the industry, I was like, I just want to talk to famous people. And then that happened and you're like, oh, and I'm sure you know how this is with you, Dan. It's like, once you get them, you're like, oh crap, now I have to talk to them about something.
Oh yeah. Just getting them on the schedule is the easy part. Once they're on the schedule, then all of a sudden it's like, crap, I actually have to prepare and do something for these people and actually interface with them somehow. Yeah, absolutely. Since I asked what the best interview was, I have to ask what the worst interview was. And maybe if you don't want to share the name, at least tell us like what made this interview bad and what happened.
Oh, I'm trying. It's funny because I always feel like after, especially like phoners like this one, it's like, I always feel that the interview could have gone so much better. And I recently interviewed an actress who is on a very popular Fox TV show. And I just felt like I hadn't seen the film that she was promoting. And I was like, I kind of forgot that I had the interview. And when it came up to it, I just kind of like bombed. Like the interview just was, it was not very good. And she was one of she just would not give me anything. Like it felt like I was asking the wrong kind of questions and she would just say yes and no. And I was like, I know I'm asking like leading questions and not just yes or no questions, but it was a disaster. But the funny thing is I then went back to write up the article a week or so later. And it was actually not as terrible as I thought. I think I just in my head had made it so crushingly bad that I couldn't get past it.
Yeah, I absolutely know the feeling. Joe and I have had a few where we'd get done with them and I'm like, I don't even want to listen to it right now. I'm just going to put it in the hard drive and just leave it there, walk away. And then when I come back to it and I'm like, God, this thing's been sitting there. We really need to publish it. It's not really so bad. But I can tell you this interview is going very well. So no worries about that.
Well, it's so funny is I remember going back to, you know, how we met on Saturday at PodCamp. I thought it was so funny that one of the presenters said, you know, once you're done, then pull it right back up and listen to it right away. And I was like shaking because I interview people easily. I interview like maybe 3 or 4 people a week. And I never do that. Like I get it done and I like turn it off and I step away from it for like a week or so. I get nervous. And now I'm like, that's actually kind of a nice idea is to maybe go back and listen to it right away and affirm to yourself that it wasn't as terrifying or bad as you thought it was.
So you think that's a good idea just to kind of soothe the soul a little bit, not necessarily for any productivity standpoint, but just to kind of make yourself feel better?
Yeah, it's just an ego. It's just for ego bruising or for ego brushing.
But what if you listen back to it and it's like, oh crap, that was worse than I thought it was. Then you just made it 10 times worse.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe, I think at that point that then you're like, well, because then you're actually listening to the other person more than you're listening to yourself freak out.
Yeah. Well, so I want to, since this is an entrepreneur podcast, I want to ask about maybe the business legitimacy of what you do, because it sounds awesome to, you know, watch movies for free and for a living and write it up and maybe, you know, interview all these people. And it's really cool and really glamorous. I say glamorous. You might disagree when you're in the trenches, but from the outside, it looks glamorous. But what about creating a business out of it? Is that something you've been able to do or that you're still working on?
I am very fortunate that I have been able to make Real Vixen and Fresh Fiction my full-time job. I graduated from college in 2006 and I joined the business right away. It was a business my mom and I started in 2004. And Real Vixen had been my personal blog while I was in college. And then I turned it into a, a professional one in 2011. And we're just very fortunate that we, how we make our money is that we actually have a dedicated sales team. We don't do, we do affiliate marketing through Amazon because we sell, you know, we want people, if they're going to watch a movie or talk about a movie or talk about a book or something, we want them to be able to click right through our site and buy that book or not, or whatnot. But we also sell advertising on our website, and that's how we're able to make our money.
So 100% of the income you make is through advertising on your websites?
It's through advertising on our websites. It's also through events. We do a lot of events in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that are mostly right now reader-based. So we will bring authors and readers together for weekends at a time, and they can kind of mingle and mix with each other. And we charge fees for that. And then we also do book signings, and we have a film club that also meets, and we're working on bringing different filmmakers to that. So we're just kind of doing, in the way that I look at it, because I come from a film festival and events planning background, I love sharing my love with other people. And I've learned that, yes, I have this global touch with my website, but you also need to meet, you also have to think local, and you need to bring people on board. And just like how you make your website a niche, you also want to make the people that can access you nicheable as well. And that's been really successful for us.
Very good. That's excellent to hear. Now, do you go to a lot of these award shows or anything like that?
I got to go to the Oscar announcements this year, which was like the coolest experience in my entire life. It was the best experience I ever had waking up at 4 a.m. and that was really neat. I'm in the Television Critics Association, which is a international group of film writers that are all like either pubbed or are EPUB or traditional publication. And we have a annual award show as well that I got to present at this year. And I think I've been to a few in Dallas, but not any of the big ones yet.
Okay, well, Joe, one of the reasons I asked, because Joe expressed some interest in having a job as being one of the people that fill in the seats for celebrities when they have to go to the bathroom. Do you have any insight in how Joe could get that job?
You need to be an intern at there's actually, I know a couple of people who've done that in LA. So either, you know, interning MTV, they usually use interns to go fill those seats. Or if you work for one of those like promo companies, and like the way that we see those mostly in Dallas are people who do like beer and liquor promotions. Those are the companies that lease, that rent out those models are the same companies that would rent out models to go and do seat filling.
Ah, so you got to be part of the pretty people. I see how it is.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Okay, well, one of the good things about having this on such short turnaround and having you on as a guest, I can ask you some timely and relevant movie and television questions. So
absolutely.
What TV shows are you watching right now that maybe others aren't, that they need to be?
How funny would that be if I was like, I'm watching something right as we're speaking. well, I'm watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC. I do a weekly podcast on that over at Film Geek Radio. And that is an interesting show. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but I'm enjoying it. I like Joss Whedon and I like the Whedon verse, so I'm giving in. I also really love Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, which just premiered last week. I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan, and I'm really not dealing with that show not being on the air anymore very well. But I did hear some good buzz about the new Better Call Saul spinoff of the series. I also love Game of Thrones. That's one of my favorite shows. And trying to think of like my must watch shows. I really like The New Girl on Fox.
Is that one that's kind of underrated or under talked about because it's on Fox? Because I hear like people like you and stuff will say it's really good, but I don't really know anyone in real life that's watching it.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's one of those shows, like, I don't know a lot of people that watch it in real life either that aren't, like, critics that have to watch it for a living. And I get worried about that because I think it's a very clever show, and it took a while to kind of get its bearings and figure itself out. I'm not a big Zooey Deschanel fan. I like her fine, but I don't like the character that she plays on the show very much. But the ensemble is really worth – I would honestly say you could probably come into the show at any point – but if you came into the second season, you would be totally fine.
All right, might have to see if Hulu can help me out with that one. Give it a.
And I also love Parks and Rec, and that's another show that kind of started off on a bad footing in the first two seasons, and then the third season on has been just phenomenal.
Okay, I'll have to try that. I feel bad. We gave up on that about halfway through the second season. We're like, yep. Okay, this isn't going to work out between us. But they, might give it a try then.
The third season, and it was funny because I remember kind of feeling bad because I loved Paul Schneider on the show. Who played the architect, and then they got rid of him at the beginning of the third season, and then the show just completely changed. And it is such a cute, really, just really sweet, very heartwarming, wonderful, touching show.
Very cool. Now, what about movies? Are there any movies that maybe you've seen that haven't come out yet that we should keep our eye out for?
Well, I definitely, let's see, I'm trying to think of what week we're in. I'm really excited about 12 Years a Slave, which is a period piece that takes place right before the Civil War, about a free man who was kidnapped by a white plantation owner and was kept as a slave. And this is based off of a true story off his real journals. And I'm seeing that tomorrow, and I cannot wait to see it. It's been getting so much attention. I also really loved Kill Your Darlings, which is a biopic about the Beat poets. That so includes Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, and William S. Burroughs. And it's a beautiful film. It's the director's first film, and he spent 12 years making it. And it stars Daniel Radcliffe, who people will know from Harry Potter. And it's a really, really great.
Very cool. Now, what about Anchorman 2? Is that one going to be pretty good?
Oh, I hope so. I cannot wait for Anchorman. There's certain movies I'm super excited about. I can't wait to see that one. I cannot wait to see Catching Fire, the new Hunger Games film next month. I'm like, I just watched the new TV spot for today, and I'm like, I can't wait. And I'm trying to think of what else is coming out that is kind of getting a lot of attention. I kind of really want to see the new Johnny Knoxville movie, Bad Grandpa, because I like really trashy films.
Yeah, that one looks trashy and real good, especially the little boy dancing on the stripper pole. That's a looks like a show stealing scene right there. That probably sounds really awful if anyone's never seen the previews and has no idea what I'm talking about, but I promise it's funny.
And there's a new Coen Brothers film this year, and I just love the Coen Brothers. I feel like even their bad movies are great. Their last movie they did was what was the last Coen Brothers movie? Well, besides No Country for Old Men, but they have a new one coming out called Inside Llewelyn Davis, and it's about takes place in the 60s, and it's about a struggling musician, kind of if you think about Bob Dylan, kind of take a week in his life as he's trying to make money to become a real singer.
Very cool. Love the Coen Brothers as well. Well, Gwen, I appreciate all the recommendations and all the chat today. Now, I know you are featured in all kinds of podcasts and blog posts and all and websites. So let's see how many you can recite to us or where people can check you out at.
Great. Well, you can definitely check me out at realvixen.com. We're about to do Ylvis, which everybody, they're a Norwegian comedy group. We're doing a feature on them that'll be up later today or tomorrow. Or by the time this goes live, it'll be up. I'm also on Twitter /realvixen. And Red Carpet Crash. I do reviews over innovation.com. I do their podcast and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast.
Very cool. Hopefully you're not the official spokeswoman for that, or else they might have to do a lot of takes. Avengers of S.H.I.E.L.D. No.
It's a mouthful.
It is. And you seem like you're still up in the air on that. So maybe we'll get some people to go over there and follow you to see if you come around on the show or if you write it off after the first season.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be on. As I told them the other day, it got renewed for 22 episodes. So at least I have a job for 18 more weeks.
There you go. Very good to hear, Gwen Reyes. Thanks so much for joining us today on the show now.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you for listening to Entrepreneur Showdown Presents. Tune in every Thursday morning for another amazing interview. To hear all the past episodes and find out more, visit entrepreneurshowdown.com.